this is, in some sense, why it's important. Because almost every string background out there is something which is not described usefully by a compactification on some sort of signal model. Okay. And so now, okay, so let me draw space of theory. So this is string theory. And now I'm going to draw the set of non-geometric string theories, of geometric string theories. It's basically right there. And non-geometric string theory is, of course, the rest. And most of it, we don't have any tools to study. So what I want to do today is to talk about how we slightly expand the genericity of the set of string theories that we can study. So what is this slightly expanded set here? So one strategy for that mathematicians use to start with simple things and study more complicated things is to take things which are locally well understood things and put them together in complicated ways. So one thing you can, of course, do is to take two geometric compactifications and just product them, just take a global product of them, of course, then you get another geometric compactification. But there are other ways of putting together simple, easy to understand geometric compactifications, which give you something non-geometric. And it's essentially something where you have a fiber and a base. So we're going to make the fiber be a torus, because that's an extremely well understood type of compactification. Have the base be some other smooth space. And just put the two together in ways where, as you go around some degenerate locus or some one cycle in the base, something, the fiber comes back to itself up to some symmetry, which is maybe not necessarily a large coordinate transformation, but is some other kind of non-geometric symmetry of string theory. Okay. So the basic idea is to expand the set of geometric string theories to things which can be understood locally as everywhere some type of geometric string theory, but globally are patched together with transition functions living in the full string duality. So, questions so far? So that's the basic strategy. And this strategy was worked out in some examples a couple of years ago by myself and John McGreevy and Brooke Williams. And so part of my talk today will be to review those results. And then the rest of my talk will be talking about how to go a little bit beyond those techniques to circumstances where this doesn't give you a controlled approximation, but I'll talk about some two-dimensional conformal field theory techniques which allow us to go beyond this sort of fibration picture.
So asymmetric orbifolds wouldn't belong to this.
Actually, so it turned out that there are models like this which have special points in their moduli spaces which are asymmetric orbifolds. And I'll talk about that. I'll remember that. But so it's basically in the same sense that ordinary collabials have special points in their moduli spaces, which are orbifolds of tori or Gaffner models or something. These things have special points in their moduli space, which are asymmetric orbifolds. And in fact, it's sort of interesting because in the same way that smooth K3s have different geometric orbifold points in their moduli spaces, these things also have you know, single modulus spaces with different types of asymmetric orbital points. So they're telling you something really new about moduli spaces of non-geometric CFD. And they do, in fact, fill out the full moduli space of the resolved asymmetric orbital. And so I'll try to get to that. But if I haven't completely filled out the picture by the middle of the talk, ask again, because I think this is a really nice fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are those all perturbatives things like that? In other words, those are monochromes in the perturbative.
That's right. So one can also, of course, do this sort of thing with monochromes in the full non-perturbative duality group. And you know, you can do that. One reason why these are a little bit nicer than that is A, they tell you something, they're a little bit more exotic than something like F-theory, because F-theory, you sort of geometrize something non-geometric. Here you sort of do the opposite. But another nice thing is that when you restrict the monochromes to lie only in the duality group of perturbative string theory, there are these extra conformal field theory tools that you can use, these world sheet tools, which you can use and which you can't use in the general case. So you can actually get a lot more information in these examples. And that's what I'll be focusing on in the second half of the talk. Okay. So to illustrate this general principle, I'm going to focus on a four-dimensional model. So a model with a T2 for a fiber and a two-dimensional base. Which will have some degenerate points in the base around which the torus undergoes monodomes. Some of them will be geometric, some will be non-geometric. Okay. And it'll turn out that there's a unique compact four-dimensional model of this type, which is not equivalent to a geometric model. And it's sort of the non-geometric analog of K3. So we call it thing one, because it's not really a manifold, it's just a thing. And it's the only one of its kind in four dimensions. So let's see how we do this. So first let's talk about what the perturbative duality group of the fiber even is. So, and we're going to always be talking about type 2 string theory. So you can do this in bosonic string theory, you can do it in hadronic string theory, and the duality groups are all different. In our particular case, I would like to focus on type 2. So in type 2 string theory, what is the duality group of a torus? The duality group of T2 is SL2Z times SL2Z. And I'm going to call these SL2Z tau and SL2Z rho, because there are two moduli for the torus, or two perturbative moduli. So there's the complex structure. And this is just some geometric modulus. And then there is also the B field plus I times the volume. So this is another complex modulus involving the B field and the volume. And we call that rho. And so the way the duality group acts is sort of clear. So tau goes to A tau plus B over C tau plus D. Rho goes to A prime rho plus B over C prime rho plus D prime. So you have these two SL2 factors which just act in the obvious way in the two complex moduli. Now, just something to point out, by the way. First of all, this second group changes the volume of the torus. Okay, so it's a symmetry, but it does not preserve the volume of the torus. It contains things like T dualities. And in fact, this element of the SLT row group is just T duality on both directions of the torus simultaneously. And remember, in type 2 string theory, T duality on a single circle is not a symmetry. It exchanges the two different type 2s. So that's not in here. It's an outer automorphism which switches those two factors, though. So T duality on a single cycle exchanges the tau of the row factors. So that's the setup. And now I'm just going to review really quickly what happens in the fully geometric case, and how these vibrations work there, and how we can extract all the information about the space, about the string theory that we would ever need, just in this vibration picture. So usually this is not how one gets information about the spectrum and so forth of a manifold, but I'm just going to try and convince you that you can. And then we'll be able to take that same set of tools over directly to the case where the monodromes include non-geometric things as well. So questions so far? Okay, so let's just remember what happens when the monodromes lie in an SL2Z geometric subgroup, so the tau subgroup. Okay, so what are these monodromes? Well, they're just geometric large coordinate transformations of the torus. So theta 1 and theta 2 go to some SL2 transformation of themselves. And so in particular, these transformations act on homology and cohomology in the obvious way. And so when you have one of these, and you transport the T2 fiber around one of these degenerate points, so let's say the monodrome is 1, 0, 1, 1, it's just a shear, it's a dimming twist which breaks the torus and twists it by 360 degrees on one cycle. So what does the total space look like in the vicinity of this thing? Well, so we're going to assume that we can preserve that we want to preserve supersymmetry locally near this guy, and in fact the classification of degenerations of T2 fibers which preserve supersymmetry was completed by Kondaira. And in particular, for this kind of monodrome, which is given by the identity plus minimal nilpotent. Okay, so that means it's the identity plus a nilpotent matrix, which is as small as it can be. It's not an integer multiple of anything. The total space is smooth. So in four dimensions, it's just a smooth point. So if we replace this by a monodromy, which is the identity plus n times a minimal nilpotent, the total space is a locally has a is an R4 mod Zn orbifold singularity. So it has a singular point. And this type of degeneration is referred to as A(n-1). And then there are other types of degenerations which are not of this form. One which will be important for us is, or useful, is the D4. So there the monodromy is just negative the identity. So So the torus just goes around and reflects. Now this type of monodromy is sort of interesting, because unlike the others, near the degenerate point, the moduli of the fiber don't blow up. So the complex structure modulus doesn't blow up, and that's because tau is fixed by this. This monodromy acts trivially on tau. Okay. So tau goes to itself. And as a result, the moduli don't blow up. There is something singular happening at this point, but it's not something you can see very, very clearly as something that's going on in the base. Now, there are also some things you can do at this point. There are Kaluza-Klein Wilson lines, which can be turned on. So there are two Kaluza-Klein vectors coming from the fiber. The two Kaluza-Klein vectors also two B vectors. But let's just focus for a second on the Kaluza-Klein vectors. And you can adjust the moduli of these things. So you can adjust just the contour integral of the Kaluza-Klein-Wilson lines, and still keep a supersymmetric solution. So what happens in the total space? What this does, so it keeps the moduli are still constant, but what it does is it splits apart the D4 singularity generically into four A1 singularities. So by tuning these moduli, you can get to a point where locally this solution just looks like R2 times T2 all mod Z2, which acts on everything. So there are four fixed points at four different places on the torus, and in the case, it just all looks like one singularity, and a nice singularity where the moduli don't blow up. So it just looks like a very simple type of singularity. So questions about that? And I'm going to refer to this just for brevity as the D4 point, because it's not really a D4 singularity, but it sort of looks like one if you only look at the base. It's really the A1 to the 4 point. So I haven't said anything yet about
Could you remind me in the F theory setup the way you produce a D4 is by 6-7, right?
Okay, right. So what happens is in the F theory setup a D4 singularity it's not really exactly 6-7 grains. It's like you can think of it as sort of 4 D4s and an O4. But I mean four D7s and an O7 of some kind.
Well, the O7 is basically three non-local.
Right. I'm just saying there's no point where it looks like six independent.
But there is all the 24/7 rings in there.
Right. Right. But I mean six. It's not six objects of the same kind.
No.
Yeah, that's right.
So here you're still left with the. So you're saying that D4 is split into four A's and. So the other point is not even a singular fiber.
So what's the right thing to say? Well, okay, yeah, so there isn't another special point. So what's the right way to say this? I mean, all these statements are also true in F theory, if this is just the axiodilemma. I mean, the point is that the four A1s you split it into still are minimal parabolic objects. The total.
Yes, right. Yeah. But those points are not singular.
No, they are, because they're still A1s. They're not. They're not A0s.
Okay.
Right. So the number of moduli is right for four objects, but the weight is right for six objects. I don't know if they have a really good language to describe it, but that's just what you get. So I haven't said yet anything about dynamics. So far, I've just talked about how to take these behaviors in the base and interpret them in the total space. So to analyze the dynamics, and just use the eight-dimensional effective supergraphy. So by dimensionally reducing on a T2, you get some supergravity theory with 32 supercharges, which has some complex scalar moduli, tau and rho, and has some vector fields, and it has some Ramone field. And the point is, you can just look for BPS solutions. With these types of boundary conditions. Okay. So you look for BPS solutions where you allow there to be certain degenerate points where the scalar moduli do certain things around those degenerate points. Okay. And then as long as all the degenerate points correspond to some of these known supersymmetric singularities, you know there is a nice way of lifting from total space, and then you can use the local information there to analyze, for instance, the boundary conditions of fluctuations at the degenerate points. Okay. So you supplement this eight-dimensional picture with a little bit of extra information that you know from analyzing the total space, but you can just take this information and put it in as an effective boundary condition on fluctuations at the degenerate points. So using that type of logic, you can find the spectrum of these pots. And again, let me just talk about what happens holding ourselves to purely geometric monodromes. So at tau monodromes, and let me just take the case where everything is minimal and parabolic. So in other words, where every monodromy is one of these identities plus a minimal and nilpotent. So there are moduli associated with the positions. So in 2A, there are vector moduli. Vector multiples. So these moduli associated with the positions fall into full vector multiples. And the vectors in these vector multiples just come from modes of the Ramone fields. In the vicinity of these singularities. So in other words, if you have two close together, so this is a tau goes to tau plus one monodromy, and this is another of the same kind, you can just analyze the spectrum of perturbations of Ramone fields, and you find that there's some vector multiplet in six dimensions, which is a mode localized in the vicinity of these two guys. And I'll talk in a little while about how you can interpret that in terms of grades. again, on this vibration pitch. So you can find some spectrum multiplets associated with these things. And now, what happens if you look for a compact model? So if you look for a compact model made up just of geometric monochromes, you find that each of these minimal parabolic monochromes makes a contribution to the curvature of the base, such that you need 24 of these guys to compactify. The base. And then combining the condition of supersymmetry with the condition that the monodromes close consistently, you find that up to change of basis, change of SL2 basis, there's only one solution, or only one moduli space of solutions. And you find that this corresponds exactly to K3. So you can analyze the spectrum of this model just completely in this eight-dimensional picture, looking at the fluctuation spectrum of modes in the base with these boundary conditions. And you find that the spectrum agrees exactly with what you would get from considering the cohomology of K3. It gives you some set of vector multiplets, no tensor multiplets in six dimensions. Okay. So questions so far. So this is how we do everything in completely in the vibration picture. And we get a lot of information about the full string theory.
Here in the example, you could take any singularity into one particular singularity in one particular matter.
Well, so they can't, it turns out that they can't all commute. If they do, then you can't close the space. So you can have about two-thirds of them commute with each other, and then the other third has to not commute. But basically, if they all commute, then the monochromy at infinity can never be traded. That's essentially the reason. If you just have n of these tau goes to tau plus 1 things, then you can never close the space because you would need the total monochromy around all the degenerate points to be trivial so that you could pull a contour off. So it turns out that there aren't that many ways that you can cancel that monochromy while maintaining supersymmetry. So you could try canceling it with a tau goes to tau minus 1 monochromy, but those aren't mutually supersymmetric. So another one way to say that is that this, so in the vicinity of this thing, tau goes as 1 over 2 pi I log z. But you can't take another one where tau goes as 1 over 2 pi I log z bar, because one of the BPS equations of the eight-dimensional supergravity is that tau should be holomorphic over the base.
So you say you take 24 of them?
But by them, I mean two minimal parabolic monochromes of some kind.
Yeah,
that's a good time. Right, you have to take some. And then it turns out that there's only really one moduli space of solutions to the BPS equations.
Is this true if the base is sphere, or is it not sphere?
If the base is non-compact, then there are more possibilities. And in fact, there are a lot of non-compact models you can make this way. So, for instance, if you have just a bunch of tables to tau plus 1 monochromes, these things are kind of like resolved Iguchi-Hansen spaces. They're not quite Iguchi-Hansen spaces because they're a little bit more compactified. So a single one of these tau goes to tau plus 1s by itself is like a periodic array of tau nuts, or a periodically identified tau nut metric. So Right. So in this. So locally here, there's one of the cycles of the fiber which shrinks over this point. And you can think of that as sort of the shrinking circle of the fat nut geometry. But then there's a second fiber, a second circle, which you can think of as the periodic identification transverse to the pelvic geometry. Okay. So they're hyper Taylor manifolds, which are not compact, and you can generate a lot of things like this. But if you want to compactify, that's a lot more restrictive. So let me just flesh out the picture of K3 in this language a little bit more. So you can have 12 of these minimal parabolic fins over here, and another 12 over here, and still have a trivial monodromy around this circle. So the minimal number of mutually supersymmetric minimal parabolic monodromes, which can generate a trivial total monodromy, is actually 12. But what this generates is a space which is asymptotically cylindrical. So it looks, so if you only had these 12 here, you just look at this part of the space, it's something which asymptotically looks like R times T3. So you have this circle, which is part of the base, and then you also have an inert T2 fiber. So these are all tau's. These are all tau's, and this is a certain limit of K3, which some people have discussed, where you make this space into a long tube, and that limit is sometimes referred to as a half K3, because you divide this into two hyper-Taylor halves. But the existence of this limit tells you a nice way that you can find some non-geometric version. So the point is that you can just change all these tau monodromes into the corresponding rho monodromes. So this gives you some, now you know that this cancels the total monodromy, because the total monodromy coming from these is trivial, and the total monodromy coming from these is trivial. And then, because of the T-duality symmetry, you also know that the tau and the rho monodromes back react gravitationally on the base in exactly the same way. Okay. So if 24, the 12 of these, and 12 more tau's close the space, it follows the 24 tau's can close the space. And you can write down explicit eight-dimensional solutions, which look just like this.
I think this is
mirror symmetry. It's not mirror symmetry. So let me say something about what mirror symmetry is here. So on ordinary K3, mirror symmetry just takes K3s to K3s. So the usual definition of mirror symmetry is just, in this language, is just tau goes to tau, rho goes to minus 1 over rho. So that's mirror symmetry. So in the usual K3, rho is constant. Tau varies in some way. And then mirror symmetry in the SYZ sense is just T-duality on the DG fiber. Now, it turns out there's another operation you can do, which is sort of the half mirror, where you just T-dual on a single circle of the fiber. Now, what that does is it exchanges tau and rho. Actually, what it does is it really sends tau to minus 1 over rho. It sends rho to tau. And right, so essentially what that does is it takes K3 and it replaces it with something where all the monodromy loci are non-geometric. They're all rho's. Okay. And now that's fine. It's some non-geometric model, but it's equivalent to a geometric one. So it's exactly the same physics as K3, because it's just some duality transformation both with the K3. So what this thing is, is it's like separating the cake between the two halves, and then gluing the two halves together with this half mirror transformation on one of the ends. That's one way to think about what this model is. So this is what we call thing one.
Is Greg's further for symmetry?
Yes. So now let me talk real quickly about how you can see that it breaks the supersymmetry into half of what K3 has.
That's one question. So if you were doing exactly the same thing in K theory, in that limit where the K3 degenerates like that, is precisely the limit where the heterotic dual, which is compactified on T2, goes into a decompactification region.
That's right, yeah, I think that's right.
Well, basically the question was, another way of describing the same thing is by saying that this is equivalent to type 1 prime, where you have the two type 1 prime, which is a theory of any interval.
Well, that's just if you just separate it.
No, if you have, If you precisely make this a long cylinder, right. And then basically you equalize along the circle that you have.
Well, hold on. So there are two things you can do. One thing that you can do is to make it into a long cylinder and then just T-roll the whole thing globally along that circle.
Yes, that's right.
Right. That's not correct.
The question is precisely what happens if you try to do with what you're doing to that type 1 prime thing.
Well, remember, there in F theory, there's only a single SL2Z factor. There aren't two of them. So I don't know if there's really an analog here. Okay. Because this gluing uses a sort of outer automorphism of the other. And that's why it doesn't give you something equivalent. So you still need that. Just to put a slightly broader focus on your question. Well, we'll see. I hope I get to it. This thing, you know, has a lot of duals and different limits. One dual which is sort of missing, which we don't understand, is the heterotic dual, or if there is a heterotic dual. It's not clear that there is, and there's no sort of obvious root to it. But we'll see that a lot of these types of things have, surprisingly, even though they're type 2, they have enhanced gauge symmetry at certain points, which is not the usual thing. Thank you. I mean perturbative enhanced gauge symmetry, not the usual sort of funny quantum or strong coupling enhanced gauge symmetry effect you use. So it looks a lot, in some sense, like the heterotic string, but we don't know any good duality for that. So now you can just, the same machinery I described of using the eight-dimensional effective theory in the base with various boundary conditions to crank out the spectrum, you can just directly apply to this case, and it really doesn't matter that the monochrome is a non-geometric. So you get a spectrum, and write it down from memory. Okay, so the first thing I should say is that if you look at the supersymmetry, so 2A on K3 has 1,1 supersymmetry in 6 dimensions. 2A on this funny half mirror of K3 has 0,2, and then 2A on thing 1 has 0,1 supersymmetry. So how can you see that? So one way you can see it is just by solving the BPS equations. So you know there are various theorems that for compact models with for compact models in just pure type 2A. without, you know, without singularities and so on, you can only get one comma one. You can only get one comma one. Okay. But because this is a non-geometric thing of some kind, it really violates all of these no-go theorems. So you can not only get something which is not one comma one, it's actually half supersymmetric. So you can see that the BPS equations are only satisfied for one chirality of spinner in the six dimensions, not two. Another way to see this has to do with the spectrum. Okay. So the Tau monodromes give you vector multiplets localized there. And the row monodromes give you tensors. And one way to understand this, by the way, is that the row goes to row plus one monodromy is just an NS5 ring. So this is one thing which is good to keep in mind. So the row goes to row plus one. It's in the sort of non-geometric SL2, but that particular element is geometric. It's just a B field shift through the torus, and then if you work out the integrated flux around one of these guys, it turns out that it's exactly the flux of an NS5 ring. And the localized spectrum is the same as that of an NS5 ring as well. There's some tensor multiplet which lives on this degenerate orbit. But then the other guys, the rest of the SL2, doesn't have any geometric interpretation. You know, it creates a fringe cut in the bottom of the fiber and so on, so it can't be anything simple like an NS5 ring. But these other elements of SL2 are really interesting. Some of them carry negative NS5 frame charge, but they're still mutually supersymmetric with a positive NS5 frame. And that's essentially at the heart of how these things allow you to evade the usual no-go theorems for H flux on compact spaces and type 2. Okay.
The total charge is still the
answer. Right, the total charge is still the answer. So the other types of row monodromes are basically sinks for NS5 ring. But they're not anti-NS5 rings. They're mutually supersymmetric with the NS5. For want of a better word, we call them T-rings, because they implement T-dualities as you go around them. So, right, so this is a good moment to mention. One way to parameterize the non-geometricity of these things, which is that if you try to probe it with a zero ring, so let's say you take a D0 and you say, well, it has to be geometric somehow because we can define the geometry by the moduli space geometry of a D0, but you can't, it turns out. It actually turns out that in general the D0 doesn't even have a moduli space, first of all. It has a potential. Basically because they're built on gradients and H fluxes. But even more basically than that, there's some of these guys where the D0 goes around and comes back as a T2, as a D2. Okay. So it's not even a point like probe of the geometry anymore when it comes back. And then there are other things, actually, the standard spine rings, where the D0 can get sucked in and annihilated. So just to drive this home, there's no stable or even static D0 ring. They don't even have a conservation law mod 1. So it's really completely non-geometric in that sense.
Couldn't you probe it with another short cycle?
Right, so you could try things like this. But I mean, let's see. So you could try to probe it. You can try to probe it with various things. I can actually come back to this. So there's a duality which takes this thing to a geometric application in some limit. And then you could try to redualize the D0 ring over on the geometric side and find some kind of good probe for this thing. But then it turns out that the BPS rings have funny transitions when you try to do this duality, which doesn't even allow you to do that very well. So So there's one final kind of check on the consistency of these models. I'll just write down what the spectrum is, which is has 9 tensor multiplets, 8 vector multiplets, 20 hypermultiplets, and then 1 gravitational multiplet. And in models with 0,1 supersymmetry in 6 dimensions, there's a very stringent condition for anomaly cancellation, which is, see if I can do it from memory. No, I can't. I don't remember, but it's 29 times the number of tensors plus, I think, the number of vectors minus the number of hypers. Yeah, that's right. Is equal to 273, and that's exactly what you get here. So the spectrum makes sense, and it satisfies a very non-trivial condition for anomaly cancellation.
So this is gravitational.
Right. So for 0,1 supersymmetry in a theory of gravity, there's basically all the anomalies are proportional to each other. It because supersymmetry sort of puts them all in one multiplet, and it's so there's only one condition altogether. Okay, so that's the general spiel on these things, and you know, and they're interesting. You know, there are 6 dimensional models you can construct that give you interesting n equals 1 vacua in 4 dimensions. There's actually a lot of 4-dimensional vacua you can construct this way. But let me point out one important limitation, which is that all of the use of the adiabatic approximation of the 8-dimensional supergravity really depends on a sort of adiabatic approximation, where you assume that the gradients of the effective moduli in the base are also small. And that really isn't a very good approximation when we start making the base small. Now, of course, the gradients blow up near these points, but that's okay, because we sort of understand what the physics of those local blow-ups. But when we start making the base as a whole small, then the breakdown of the effective 8-dimensional field theory doesn't even come from that kind of local physics we understand anymore. So it's good if there's some sort of tool that we could use to get beyond this adiabatic approximation. So I'm going to talk about that tool and then some of the interesting questions that you can try to answer using it. So the tool comes back to a question that Shanka asked earlier in the talk, which was about exactly solvable points in the moduli space. So let's take some special limits of this solution where the moduli are constant over the base. So there's a limit where the moduli are constant over the base. And then you just have 4 degenerate points with what I'm calling d4 and d4 prime singularities. So the d4 are the taus and the d4 primes are the rows. And then there are these vector moduli on the base, which, for the geometric singularities, you know you can tune to reduce this to just an exact orbital, something which is locally an exact orbital fold of R2 times T2 equals T2. So by duality, you know that you can do the same sort of tuning over here. And you can get something which looks very much like it should have some exact CFT description. And it turns out that there's a nice guess you can make. Because if you take R times G3 mod Z2 times Z2 tilde. So where the first Z2 reflects around this point, the second Z2 reflects around this point with an extra action. So this tilde means that you include an action of minus 1 to the F left space time. And the reason you pick that is because if you look at the action on Grains and on Ramon fields of these Mondrovis, this is doesn't act with any special sign, but this type acts with an extra minus 1 on all Ramon fields. Okay. So there's a candidate for an orbifold description of this thing. And what you find when you calculate the spectrum, find exactly, so 8 twisted tensors, 8 tensor multiplets in the twisted sector, and then 8 vector multiplets in the other twisted sector. So you have some twisted vectors living here, you have some twisted tensors living here. So it gives you exactly the same spectrum as the other model. Oh, yeah, and then there's one untwisted tensor. So for vectors and tensors, it gives you the exact same spectrum as that model. And then taking the twisted and untwisted moduli, we get 20 hypers. So the point is that not only is this some point in the moduli space of those solutions, it tells you that type of solution really does capture the full moduli space of this kind of resolved asymmetrical. So questions about that? So I'll now say a couple of things about Grains and stable and BPS and non-BPS objects in these theories.
So before you do that, so there's another model you can construct that can choose a different phase in twisted cycle which has different energy pool. Do you know what that means?
Oh yeah, but that's just K theory. Right. So if you make that a standard Z2.
So I'm saying that you know you have a Z2 and Z2, so you can have this K torsion.
Oh, sorry. So which choice of discrete torsion do you want to make?
Well, there's unique choice for just. Well, either you have the standard orbifold action.
Oh, I see.
Or you have some signs in just the same.
Yeah. No, okay. I see what you're saying. That's a good question. Now I understand the Z2 you're talking about. And the phase you're talking about. Yeah, that would be a good thing to work out. I don't know. So let me just say a couple of things about Grains and these guys. So first of all, with some difficulty, you can learn everything about the Grains in this model at a generic point just from the vibration measure. And you can do it, you know, you can do it the same way in K3. So I'll just talk about it in K3 for a second. So in K3, on the fiber, you have some one grains, or some things which grab a single cycle of the fiber. Okay. There are one grains in the fiber and maybe something else in the base. And they transform as a doublet under the SL2, under the geometric SL2. And then it turns out they transform trivially under the non-geometric SL2. And then it turns out that there's a condition for a PQ type of brain, which is a one brain in the base as well, to terminate on a degenerate locus. And it's just that P come Q lies in the image of m minus 1, where m is the monodromy around a particular degenerate locus. Okay. So this just gives you some rules for the termination of various types of effective 1 gradients in the base. And using those rules, you can find all of the 2 cycles in K3. So they're just effective 1 gradients in the base coming from 1 gradient wrapping a single cycle of the fiber, which begin and terminate according to these rules. And now you can, again, do the same sort of, and by the way, this accurately does tell you what is the total homology of a K3. So you can do the same type of thing when you're tallying row monodromies. And right, so it turns out that in a given model, you can have things which are D2s in the total space here, if you're in 2A, and then you basically can't have anything that begins or terminates on these guys, because it would have to be either a 0 grain or a 2 grain, a 0 cycle or a 2 cycle in the fiber, but then it would have to be odd dimensional in the total space. Okay. And 2A doesn't have those, unless there's an extra direction along 6 dimensions. So in other words, this type of object doesn't generate any particle-like states in 6 dimensions, but it does generate string-like states in 6 dimensions. So this gives you a string, a sort of a D string in 6D, and then this gives you a sort of a D particle. And these are exactly the D objects which couple to the six-dimensional vector in tensor multiples. And now you can also look at the spectrum of rings here. And now just using ordinary CFT tools for open string theories in orbifolds, you find again the exact same spectrum. So you have some fractional D0 grains which are pinned to these orbifold points. Basically, 8 different kinds of those. You have 4 kinds here and 4 kinds here, and then you have some fractional 1 grains which are pinned to these orbifold points. So you get exactly the right type of grains. But now here's an important difference from the usual situation. So it's easy to show that these brains are stable because they're charged under the vector and tensor multiplets, and then at weak coupling, it's easy to show that they're the lightest objects which are charged under those vector multiplets. But it's also very easy to show that they are non-CS. Once you look at the spectrum, it's essentially the closed string spectrum. It's essentially a one-line proof. So, in the closed string theory, the space-time supersymmetry is chiral on the world sheet. So, in other words, it comes only from the right-moving spin fields and not from the left-moving spin fields. So then it's a one-line proof to show that in an open string theory, or that every open string theory represents a non-BPS state. Because for a BPS frame, there has to be some boundary condition on the open string world sheet that reflects right-moving into left-moving space-time supersymmetry. And if there just isn't any left moving space time supersymmetry, the brain is automatically not BPS. So this is an interesting theory, because this is something which is, I think, not too much like any other, or at least not a lot of other weakly coupled string theories that we know. Usually in weakly coupled string theory, it's hard to find stable non-VPS states. You can do it, but you sort of have to stand on your head a little bit. In these theories, it's actually very easy, and they just generically have a lot of them. So I'm finding that I'm almost out of time. So before I end, I'm just going to tell you a real puzzle. And then I'll see how many of you can guess the answer. And I'll say that this is something, this puzzle is something which is being resolved in some work in progress with Johannes Walcher. So, you have a non-geometric theory on thing one. And I mentioned earlier, I think, that there was a duality, which takes you to a geometric type two string theory on a smooth manifold called the Voisin-Borsetta space, or a Voisin-Borsetta space. So it's a certain type of elliptically fibered Kolodion manifold. So we throw in an extra T2 factor here. And so then we get some four-dimensional vacuum with n equals 2 supersymmetry. And we trace the BPS states under this duality. And in particular, we trace the states represented by some of these fractional rings. Some of these fractional, in this case, fractional V1s. Decrease on curves. Okay. So there's a duality which takes you between these two theories and changes these non-VPS fractional V1s into these three rings wrapping curves, which are BPS, okay? So they're supersymmetric, and they map under a duality to some stable non-BPS object, which is... Okay, so it's a
strong coupling.
Sir?
Is it weak or strong coupling?
No, it's not weak coupling. It's a strong coupling duality. So the sequence is... It involves a 9-11 flip first, and then T duality, and then just a geometric rotation. But the important thing is it involves a 9-11. So there's some strong coupling going on, but it's a little bit puzzling because on this side you can show that these fractional rings are the lightest objects which carry the corresponding charge, the charge corresponding to those guys. And so it's easy to show that this transition where the BPS D3s turn into these non-BPS D1s can't be a marginal stability transition. So because there's just no way that you can throw off a lighter constituent carrying this charge. Because there isn't. So what's the resolution? Since the paper hasn't come out yet, I'm going to leave it as a mystery. But I'm not. But I've gone a little bit over time. But let's just say that there does seem to be a resolution, and it's a new mechanism for BPS elimination, which is not not the, the usual marginal stability transition. So I think I'll just end my talk there and take questions.
So in your case, in these non-geometric applications, you say that can you eliminate the geometric moduli and are they fixed at string scale or what is it?
Right, so that's the right way to say it. I mean, I'm not sure if the right thing to say is that you really, I know eliminating the geometric moduli is exactly the right language. It's more, I mean, dropping geometric materials could just be a rescale of the whole manifold, scaling it up. Now, the reason you can't do that is because there are these funny row monodromies which create branch cuts in the volume. So, for instance, you could have some combination of row degeneracies where the total monodromy is row goes to minus 1 over row. So that boundary condition doesn't allow you to, for instance, scale up row uniformly. Because if you send row to twice row everywhere, it would no longer obey that boundary condition. So that's sort of the mechanism by which you can kind of think of the obvious geometric moduli as being eliminated.
So how do you
add
these?
Can
you have an example in which non-geometric and into some duality and map it to something that, well, I don't know what this really is, but just some geometric element.
Yeah, that's actually very nice. It's actually quite special. So the point
is, you can never get out of a non-geometric application.
I mean, so sometimes you can, but it's not generic. In fact, to do it in this case, we had to put in an extra G2. So it's actually not something you can do in just the phantom by itself. Let me just say something real quick about going the other way. So one motivation for considering these things is that once you start considering geometric compactifications with flux, these things are basically connected by almost every known duality to geometric compactifications with flux. So if you take like a KKLT compactification and apply mirror symmetry, you always essentially get one of these. In fact, in general, you get something even a little nastier than these. But with one sort of mild condition, which is that the H-flux have at most two legs on the SYZ fiber, you always get something exactly of this type, except with a non-geometric vibration by T3s instead of by T2s.
Does that mean that you do not have any new types of flux compactifications?
Well,
I mean, in other words, is there anything outside the class of the usual flux compactification?
Yeah. I mean, that's right. If you take the usual flux compactification and mirror it, you get generically you get to one of these non-geometric things. So I can parameterize the statement of genericity in an exact way by saying if you take the deformed conifold with flux, which is sort of lives in every collab, yeah, and you take it with generic fluxes. So Klebanov's graph scalar has only Ramon flux through the compactity cycle. But if you take it with some generic PQ fluxes and you mirror it, you always get something of this flux.
So is it one example known where you know what exactly the mirror is?
Yeah, well, it is known, but it's not all. I talked about this at the string phenomenology workshop, and then at a talk at Princeton. But yeah, the deformed conifold with H flux through the compact recycle, the mirror of that is a non-geometric model that you can write down sort of topologically. I don't know. I don't have a measure, but you can so topologically in the sense that you can write down. So I'll just show it real quick. So this is the usual picture of the deformed conifold, where those lines represent degenerate loci for T3, for T3 fibration. Okay, so there's some geometric monodromy here. There's some other geometric monodromy here. Okay, which the T3 undergoes as it goes around these two types of degenerate loci. And then there's a sort of compact three cycle, which you can think of as a three brain obeying the origination and termination rules onto these two pieces of the degenerate locus. Now, if in addition to this, you add some B field shift monodromies, which are compatible with these geometric monodromies, that puts some non-trivial H flux through that free cycle. So there's a choice of B field shift monodromies, which give you not an NS5 brain, but some sourceless flux through that free cycle. So I'm going to call those total monodromies, including the B field pieces, as N and M prime. Okay. Now apply mirror symmetry. So mirror symmetry is just M goes to itself conjugated by T duality on the T3. So that's what mirror symmetry is, almost by definition now. And because of the presence of this B field piece, what you get out is something which, again, creates, you know, branch cuts in the volume of the fiber and so on. So as a kind of a topological T3 vibration, you can see that the mirror of the deformed conifold with H flux is an non-geometric. Okay. Now, of course, one doesn't have a metric on this guy even in principle.
Do you have a world shape description?
No, unfortunately. I mean, I think actually there isn't even, well, I don't know, I don't think there's even a good world shape description of the original thing, the form conflict.
No, but I mean, you know, there's a similar example to this, yeah, which is the obeying the conical with H flat. You can take, okay, what we've had is the metric, it's like some SU3 structural manifold that you get by wrapping five frames on a Gucci constant space. That gives you some six-dimensional manifold with flats. And actually, that sigma model can be described in terms of a linear sigma model on the worksheet. You do horrible after duality, you end up actually with some Gettner-type description. That definitely like Kapustin and Horrible.
Yeah, right. I was actually a little bit confused about this example for a while. So this is the case where you actually have. Right, so if you did the analogous thing on, say, the resolved conifold, if you wrapped some NS5 brains on the resolved conifold, and then went through a geometric transition, then you would get to the deformed conifold with flux.
Yes.
And then you could imagine applying the Horry-Waffa tricks.
But the problem is that there isn't a linear sigma model description of that.
Right, exactly. Well, in fact, I think I even know how to write down a linear sigma model of the case of the resolved conifold with NS5 brains wrapped on the cycle. But I've gotten very confused about what happens when you try to go through the geometric transition. So I'll tell you, I guess, why I was confused. I don't know if people are confused. But the confusion had to do with.
I mean, that's solution is otherwise known as from the same image.
Is that exactly not the same image?
Yes.
Okay.
On the edge of the world.
Right, well, but it matters because if you apply S duality to the thing from one, I mean, if you apply.
You can do it in a way that you only have an SNS class.
Right.
So you're on the first five.
Right.
That's what the
right. Okay, right, that's right. So So what's the point? So right, so what I was a little bit confused about was the normalizability of the K-Ramondorff for the collapsing two-sphere. So if the Kalman modulus were normalizable, then there shouldn't really be a world CFT at all corresponding to the solution with NS5 rings wrapped on it. Because the renormalization group should just renormalization group down the size of the two sphere. Because this is a tree level effect in
The solution now has a tree sphere.
I'm saying the case before the geometric transition doesn't even, well, the question has to do with whether that solution exists as an actual solution to the equations of motions. If it doesn't, then there shouldn't even be a linear sigma model for fibrains wrapped on the two-sphere. Because they just force down the size of the two-sphere, and the solution comes back out as a three-sphere flux closure. That depends on whether or not the Kalman modulus corresponds to a normalizable mode in four dimensions or not. So if the mode is normalizable, then the thing you thought was a linear sigma model for NS5 rings wrapped on the two-sphere is actually a linear sigma model for the Mount-Sinai solution. But it looks like the Kalman modulus is actually non-normalizable in four dimensions.
Yeah.
Right. So in other words, the linear sigma model just gives you a solution with a two-sphere and NS5 rings on it. So it doesn't really tell you. You have to somehow do the geometric transition by hand on the world sheet. And that's something which gets kind of confusing. It's not clear how to do that. But I'm just telling you this whole story to sort of say how close one is to being able to do this in principle, but not without quite exactly being there. Yeah.
Any questions?